begin after six taps. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Hello, listeners. Thanks for tuning in to the FlixFlies podcast. I'm like totally your host, Lady P. No relation to Master P. And on today's show, I'm rolling with my homies.
A plus.
Our first guest traveled all the way from the Val to be here today. It's our favorite virgin who cannot drive, Miss Mariah E. Gates.
Hi.
And what's this I hear reverberating through the halls? The maudlin music of the university station? Why, that can only mean the return of Miss Kristen Sales.
Hi there.
And what's this? A fourth person on our panel? Yes, ladies and gentlemen, looking foxy in her satin baby doll dress, Miss Anne Marie Kelly. I need an as if.
Yeah, you do for that.
As if.
There you go.
Thank you. As I mentioned, there are four people here. That's more than I've ever had on the show at one time. Clearly, things are already falling apart. But I just want to warn the listeners. I'm not exactly sure what the audio quality is going to be. But I'm sure it'll be fine. You know, our energy will more than make up for any lack of audio quality. But the reason we've got a packed house today is because today's film is probably the most popular film we've ever discussed on this show. It's our third FlixWise Favorites entry in our female filmmaker extravaganza. Anne Marie is going to tell us why she thinks Amy Heckerling's 1995 comedy Clueless is one of the greatest films of all time. Anne Marie, tell us what's Clueless about?
What so isn't it about,
exactly.
Really? Clueless is the touching story. No, sorry. I've got the giggles out. We're going to be fine.
We're going to be fine.
We're going to be
fine. Very serious business.
So the reason I wanted to bring up Clueless for this podcast is because it's, I mean, not only is it a fantastic movie from 1995 that I think is genre and generation defining in a way. There are teen comedies before Clueless and there are teen comedies after Clueless. And most of the ones made after Clueless have its DNA in them somewhere. Even anything from like Election to Mean Girls. But it's also a fantastic example of what a great writer-director in a good moment in the zeitgeist can do. And it's just so much fun. I really wish that Cher's computer program for clothes actually existed.
I want that so bad.
It would be so useful.
It seems like in the interim of the 20 years since it's... That would exist already.
You know
right?
why?
Why does it not?
It's because Star Trek nerds are overwhelmingly male and go into programming, and so we have all the Star Trek technology. Although there are a lot of lady Star Trek nerds, but they aren't told to go into STEM. It's a STEM problem. We don't have women going into STEM and creating our Clueless wardrobe thing.
Right. There you go.
Let's
so,
get on that.
So slight divergence, but a valid point for why I think it's a relevant.
I like that we're getting into didacticism as soon as possible.
It's why I still think it's a relevant movie. It's such a fantastic blend of seriousness and silliness and satire. It introduced people who weren't on the West Coast at the time to a lot of slang that still gets used today, for better or for worse. And I think if you haven't seen, you absolutely should by now.
Okay, so what happens in Clueless? Like, real brief.
Clueless is a teen comedy based on Emma, in brief, a Valley girl who's not actually from the Valley, she's from Beverly Hills, named Cher, who is the most popular girl in her school, decides to take under her wing a new girl named Ty.
Played by Brittany Murphy.
Cher. Cher is played by the absolutely fantastic Alicia Silverstone. And so in the process of taking poor plaid-wearing Ty under her wing, Cher goes through a little bit of a self-discovery moment, too, of trying to figure out who she is and what she wants.
Okay. All right. This is a ridiculous question, but... Kristen, do you like Clueless?
Yes, I do, Lady P.
Okay. Tell me why.
I think mostly for the reasons that Anne-Marie has laid out. It is a quintessential teen film text, especially for people our age, because I feel like even if we didn't see it in 1995, I didn't. Actually, the first way that I encountered Clueless was the subsequent television series. That got shown on TV, and as a child of television, that's what I watched, and that's how I was introduced to the world of Clueless and the very unique language and the style and everything, and Donald Faison, that's the whole thing. I think if you're a millennial, then all of the teen films in both television and movies and in the broader pop culture owes a debt to Clueless in terms of the way that it constructs like teenage language, the dynamics in the friend group, and also the sort of like geographics specificity of Los Angeles and all that kind of stuff. And I think, like, especially on television, this like sort of ushered in a lot of teen TV, like the rise of like the WB and or now the CW or whatever. So I feel like all of those things are like really indebted to what Clueless did. And so if you go back and you watch Clueless, you're like, oh my god, this is such a like a seminal text and understanding like where those influences come from.
All right, Mariah, your turn. What do you think of Clueless?
I love it. I saw it in theaters because I was the child of a small town movie theater where that's all you could do for fun. So I went to every movie practically. And this one was not rated R, so it was really easy to go to. And I remember just really loving all of the fashion. That was really what brought me to it and how much I loved it. Those hats that... what's her name? Dionne wears. They're amazing. They're terrible and amazing, and I want them really bad. And I just remember, I think it was probably the first teen film that I saw, because I didn't really see any of the 80s teen films until I was older, because they're all rated R, you know. And then this one managed to have a lot of, like, silliness and sex and all kinds of stuff, but without... you know, pushing the R button.
Right.
So that it was very respectful, I think, to all the characters, which I didn't realize at the time I enjoyed, but looking back now, I'm, like, glad that, like, all of these women's, like when Cher decides she wants to have sex, she's not shamed ever.
Yeah.
You know, and even with the discussion when she's, you know, called a virgin, it's still not, it's, like, happy ribbing. It's not really, they're not really being mean. Right.
It's within the context of their friendship.
Yeah.
So it feels very safe. Like, yeah. That's one, I think, yeah, and you don't, maybe you don't realize that if you're watching it when you're younger, but looking back, and especially in, like, context to a lot of other films within the genre, or even films of the time, it's like, I feel like that's a very stark contrast. Like, all the characters in this movie, like, get a really fair shake, I think, even though they're quite different.
Yeah, so what are we setting it up? What are we comparing this with? Is it movies of the 80s? Maybe we can talk about what the movies of the 80s did versus what Clueless does. What exactly does it do different? Where does it diverge?
Well, teen films in the 80s, I mean, even if you look at John Hughes' teen films, they're dark, if not violent. Like, Karate Kid is actually violent. But if you look at even the John Hughes ones, they're dark. They're dealing with really serious and tough issues. They get hard R ratings for a reason. And that's good, and those, I'm not saying that any of those shouldn't exist. Even Heckerling's first, like, foray into
Fast
the teen genre. Fast Times at Ridgemont High deals with abortion and drug abuse and a lot of other things, too.
I just rewatched that last week, and the way that they deal with that abortion is so well handled that I feel like it's only because a woman was writing and directing there, or directing. Cameron Crowe wrote it, but,
yes,
you know.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Clueless, by comparison, it's not dealing necessarily with, like, as quite deep or, I don't know, scary issues, but it doesn't have the same aim. It's more trying to kind of capture what life is instead of, like, it's not an issue picture, necessarily. Clueless is aiming to be a social satire instead of dealing with hard issues. It's aimed at kind of examining the very artificially placed social hierarchy that exists in high schools, and then constructing one of its own that then resonates into later movies. And in the same way that its source material, Emma, did. Emma is a Jane Austen love story, but it's really about poking fun at this very silly social world of the time, and which turns out there's a lot in common between 18th century England and
high school
in the 20th century. Or 19th century England? My bad. Anyway. So I think the goal of it is different, but it works very well for what it wants to do. And one of the things that Mariah touched on that I really love about the movie is that Heckerling doesn't look down on any of her characters. Cher is a smart person. She might pronounce Haitians wrong, and she's uses a lot of slang, but she's never accused by anyone in the movie whose opinion the movie values, or by the movie itself, of being a stupid person.
But even when she's making mistakes, and you might think that they're silly mistakes, like, her, I think her smartness comes in the fact that she's willing to learn mm-hmm. and adopt new ideas and sort of, like, you know, absorb the different perspectives that people have, and it is really, like, a growth experience. Like, she is not, you know, jaded, which I think a lot of teen films have sort of taken this sort of, like, too cool for school kind right. of thing. Like, Cher is very engaged. Mm-hmm. Like, she wants to, you know, be involved with things. She wants to be involved with her friends. She really cares about their well-being, and that's how she expresses her, you know, like, her humanity. Her charity is, like, to be engaged and to be, you know, like, giving of her time and her energies with her friends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, when I think of teen movies, I do inevitably think of John Hughes, and then further, like, for even more specifically, probably Breakfast Club. Mm-hmm. And I think this movie totally subverts all the cliches of Breakfast Club. I don't know. I mean, in that they're both social satires, but it may, despite Clueless seemingly being frivolous and very colorful, where, like, Breakfast Club has that sort of muted color palette and takes everything very, very seriously. I think the social critique in Clueless is actually smarter and more sophisticated, in my opinion. But I'm not a John Hughes fan.
I don't like The Breakfast Club
okay.
either.
Do we all hate The Breakfast Club? Could we come out and say that?
I feel comfortable saying
that. I've never held anything against The Breakfast Club. I just think its goal is different.
Yeah, I think maybe, like, the difference between the characters in The Breakfast Club and the characters in Clueless is that the roles that the characters were playing, the archetypes, seem very entrenched in Breakfast Club, even mm-hmm. as the point of that movie is to try to, like, you know, come to an understanding that these people are more than their stereotypes, but it sort of ends up reinforcing them anyway.
Right, right.
Like, there are very few narrow binaries that these characters are sort of allowed to perform within, whereas I think in Clueless, like, a lot of those identities and the hierarchies and the friend groups are a little more fluid, a little more malleable, and even though, like, people are afraid to, or they sort of, like, ignore the, like, the stoner character, like Breckin Meyer or whatever, it sort of comes around, like, he is not totally on the fringes of that friendship. Like, there are, like, these sites where these people interact. It's not all this group sits here and this group sits here, and they aren't, like, mean to each other necessarily. It's more of just a sort of subtle understanding of, like, not everyone in high school is friends, but you all sort of know each other.
Well, it is one of those, like, setups of the teen movie that there's, like, the scene where they explain where all of the social cliques are. It's usually a lunchroom scene where they're like, and these guys sit over here, and these guys sit over here. And Cher does it via voiceover. Or no, she actually introduces Ty. Like, they walk down the quad. Which, the only reason, side note, that they have a quad is because they're shooting at Occidental College, which is my alma mater. Mm-hmm. But they're walking down the quad, and she's explaining who's whom and where they are. But the movie sets up social situations where everybody interacts pretty much constantly, which is, like we've been
except
saying...
Except the Persian Mafia.
Yeah.
Except the Persian
they never,
Mafia.
They never come in.
That's true.
They just hang out in their BMWs.
Yeah. But it's like we've been saying, it's more true to life in terms of how your high school experience works, is that even if you feel isolated from your cohort or from the people that you're going to school with, you still interact with them mm-hmm. in class or out of class or in the lunchroom. Like,
yeah, the groups aren't, like, hermetically sealed. Like, you, there's right. a lot of, yeah.
It's not like 10 Things I Hate About You when the guy sits down next to the popular guy and he goes, why are you sitting here? Like, that doesn't quite happen.
Right.
No,
right.
There are way too many, like, hard rejections in high school movies, which I think is never true to life. Like, the more true to life experience is just, like, ignoring someone.
Ghosting.
It's like, it's just not engaging with someone. And I feel like there are a lot of these, that's a huge part of Clueless, is, like, you know, some characters sort of drop out of the narrative because they aren't Cher's priority. Like, her friend Dion, like, when she sort of starts to, like, when she makes Ty her project and Dion sort of gets put to the side and then she comes back. It's, I feel like that is a lot more of what happens mm-hmm. in high school.
Right. What is the social satire exactly? What are they satirizing?
I think that they're satirizing a couple of things. One is that high school students are very self-conscious and not even a little bit self-aware. And so it's kind of pointing to the fact that everybody's putting on either literally or figuratively a front of who they are, and that's not necessarily true. But what's kind of fantastic about it is that they assume automatically that the other person is always telling the truth about themselves. But I think more what it is kind of looking at what those social structures that we've all been discussing are and how they're constructed and what makes Cher the popular girl that then allows her to turn Ty into a popular girl as well, that little Pygmalion type moment, and how artificially constructed those are.
And then it's also satirizing just the Beverly Hills sort of the idea of the Beverly Hills lifestyle that was, you know, like really popular at the time because of 90210 and all of those like primetime soaps and everything. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good point. There were a number of primetime television shows that did focus on really wealthy high schoolers. And maybe this is, poking fun of them in a way that hadn't occurred to me.
And doesn't Jason Priestley, like, get a shout-out?
Yes, he does.
In
that movie? Is it James Dean or Jason Priestley?
Right, that's, like, one of the, like, sort of self-conscious levels of the movie. It's, like, they know that they're talking.
You know, I did, one thing that I do love about the movie is, like, how Dee and Cher seem so... They're at once, like, sort of naive, but also they have a certain wisdom about a very select things. They're very good at understanding just like the social milieu of high school, and then even beyond high school. Like, Dee makes that comment about Josh going through his post-adolescent idealistic phase. Like, how would she have any awareness that that's a thing, right? But that's like, that's their area of expertise, so I wonder how far that extends. Like, do they know, like, do they have understandings of like midlife crises and stuff like that?
She is always talking about not dating high school boys.
Yeah.
But yep. She actually doesn't date anybody,
right? Exactly.
She's waiting.
Yeah, exactly.
To get away from high school boys.
Yeah,
but college boys aren't really not that much better.
That is true.
They just can legally drink.
She's going to go to college and, like, start sleeping with her professor or something.
Well, let's talk about Cher's sexuality.
She's not going to marry Paul Rudd? Come on.
No, she's going to marry Professor Bear.
Oh, no.
From the previous podcast. Wait, wait.
Yeah.
This sounds oddly familiar. Yeah. I can't figure out why.
Regular listeners will understand.
Little clueless women.
Yes.
Little clueless.
Anyways, let's talk about Cher's sexuality and how, just in general, how the movie deals with sexuality. I know, Mariah, you talked about it earlier, about how the film doesn't judge any of its characters, regardless of their,
choices.
Choice, right, yeah. Precisely, yeah. Is that a novel thing at this point? I seem to, I'm remembering a lot of shaming happening in a lot of the teen movies prior to Clueless. Mm-hmm. This is the first one that I can recall that really understood, everyone has a variety of different experiences in high school, and, that's a realistic thing.
Right, and then I feel like immediately after, in sort of the late 90s, early 2000s period, like, all the teen movies were about trying to get laid.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sort of, like, in the wake of American Pie, or, like, really, like, sexually active, like, teenagers, like, Cruel Intentions and things like that. It was all, like, very sexy. Yes. And I feel like one of the things that endures about Clueless is that it is sort of, it's innocent, but it's not naive, and all of these people... In a way, they sort of, like, display a modicum even of maturity, because none of them seem to be trying too hard. Like, they're all fairly comfortable with, like, what level they're at or what they're doing. Even though they are, like, self-conscious about their choices, they seem to have, a head on their shoulders, even if it's an airhead. You know, it's like there's not a whole bunch of, like, cattiness or ambition. And I just feel like the teen movies that I was more aware of, which is, like, the American Pie era, it seemed like all of those teenagers were so far from, like, anybody I knew, or I was like, who are these people?
Yeah.
They're, like, 35 having, like, orgies. I was like, I don't know, like, what this is. And Clueless, to me, seems more relevant, and I get more pleasure watching it, because they seem the kids seem to be all right, as I say.
Yeah. My absolute favorite line is in the movie is, "You've seen how picky I am about my shoes, and those only go on my feet."
Yes.
Like, that is hands down the one that I lose it at.
Yes.
That's a great line, but it's a great, like, mission statement.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like people could just, like, print that out and be like, here, here's my, this is my answer, you know?
Precisely,
instead of having those, like, pledge cards, just...
Oh, no promise rings, just people just watch Clueless.
Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I feel like all of these choices are variable and they're all okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There is no shaming. And even, like, the gay character in the movie, also not shamed. It's more like that Cher is the butt of the joke because she doesn't understand, whereas it's super obvious to everyone else. Like, that is one of her, the ways in which she's clueless, but then also when she gains that knowledge, like, it's fine. Like, she just accepts it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Would that have been really obvious to viewers at the time that he was gay? I guess it depends on who you are.
I don't know. I think if you have seen Spartacus. I think at the Spartacus scene, it becomes maybe obvious. Because I don't think it's obvious in the beginning.
Mm-hmm. No, they drop hints, but nothing like...
Yeah, it's not super, like, there's no... in opposition to other teen films, he's not, like, a flamboyant stereotype.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's very... There is this sort of understanding of development with his character.
Right, right, yeah. I had this thought as I was watching it this time that... I know Ty comes out immediately and says, "Oh, I'm not a virgin." Mm-hmm. But the way that she talks about sex kind of led me to believe that she might have been.
Mm-hmm.
She seemed like when Dee asks her, "Have you ever done it in water?" And she goes, "Oh, yeah." Like, there's no way. Right?
I kind of agree because there's a similar arc in Fast Times where the Phoebe Cates, is it Phoebe Cates?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Like, keeps going on and on about how she has sex with her, you know, boyfriend who's in Chicago or whatever. And then when Jennifer Jason Leigh actually does it, they start talking about it. And she says, like, Phoebe Cates claims that her boyfriend can go for 30 minutes. And then when the guy went for, like, 20, she's like, "That's not bad for a high school boy." And you're like, you don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And I like that scene, though, because I know this is a different movie, but because she knows that her friend doesn't know what she's talking about, and she doesn't shame her about it. She just goes with it.
Yeah.
And goes, "Oh, you don't actually know what you're talking about."
Yeah.
But it's all internal.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's a similar thing with Clueless.
Yeah.
Those friendship dynamics are very true to life.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I think that's because a woman wrote it and directed. So female friendships are recognizable as opposed to oppositional or set or in the key of male fantasy, which they often are in other
teen
movies.
That's my favorite key.
The key of male fantasy.
That's the name of Kanye West's new album, right?
Set in the key of male fantasy.
Oh, gosh. Thank you. All right. But what else is there to talk about with Clueless? What, like, I think we need to talk about the outfits.
Amazing, right? Amazing costumes.
Yeah.
Yeah, she basically launched that whole trend of the Chanel mini, Chanel.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was all her.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I also think it's the fashion is very subtle because when you said about Ty and her tragic plaid or whatever, as opposed to Cher and Dion's fashion plaid, there's not that much of a difference in terms of the plaid. It's just like how these fashion hierarchies, which are tied to class, are sort of portrayed. And it's like she's a little grunge or whatever, which is, you know, bad, I guess, in the world of college. Or rather, it's the sign of the college age set, the super serious college age set. Whereas their sort of sunny plaids, their tailored plaids, their designer plaids are, you know, desirable. And it means that you've put an effort into your outfit, as seen in, like, Cher's computer program. That's a lot of effort.
Right.
Whereas Ty just, like, gets a flannel at the thrift store, or Breca Meyer's character also gets a flannel at the thrift store and they just put it on or tie it around their waist. Mm-hmm. So it's the, not necessarily the garment itself, it's the class indications and the amount of effort that you're putting into your outfit that sort of designates what the difference is.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
I had a thought, it's tangentially related. The scene where she's trying to talk to her housemaid and she's like, "I don't speak Mexican." and Paul Rudd is like giving her shit for it. But then every time he comes to the house, he's eating food and he leaves it all over the place. And he's like, who's picking up after you, Paul Rudd? That same lady. And you're not thinking of her in that moment, but you're thinking of her when you see it. And I think that's part of the layer of satire where it's like that activism of calling it out when you see it, but actually being complacent in it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it goes back to Cher's sort of malleability and her willingness to change her attitudes, because she's 16, she's a sponge, so she doesn't know a lot of stuff, but she absorbs and observes stuff, and then she changes her behavior, as opposed to Paul Rudd, who's, you know, the quintessential college student who's always just like, you know, Greenpeace and whatever, but he doesn't actually, like, that doesn't infiltrate his behavior. Like, right. He doesn't change his opinions.
Right.
So that's good call.
Yeah. No, I think so. I think you touched on something. Like, these characters are like very varying shades of like frivolous or hypocritical or, you know, shallow, kind of vapid. But they're still so endearing. How did she strike that balance?
It's a tonal thing. Amy Heckerling likes these people, and she wants you to like them. She doesn't want you to judge them if they come across as vapid or shallow, with the exception of, like, maybe two, like, background characters that...
I mean, Amber might be my favorite character. It's a really delicate balance.
Amy Heckerling really likes these people, and so it's a delicate tonal balance. It's one I don't know that anybody particularly masters well. It's one I don't think even she has mastered well. But it goes back to the fact that she understands that these are teenagers who are not very self-aware. Mm-hmm. So what they're projecting is mostly based on what they're trying to figure out who they are. And so she's not going to judge them for the ridiculous things that they say.
Yeah. What do you mean that she hasn't pulled it off well?
Because I just watched Vamps.
Okay. That she has faltered, but she executed it well here. Mm-hmm. Right, okay.
I think that's why this is her most endearing movie.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And her best movie, probably.
Yeah.
Endearing and enduring.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We also have to talk a little bit about the freeway scene, because it's so accurate for the first time you get on the freeway.
Are we transitioning into how this is a great L.A. movie?
It's such a good, like, L.A. movie.
This is a seminal teen film, but then I think for people that live in Los Angeles or people who have moved to Los Angeles, this is just, like, one of the most... And it's... not super obvious about LA. It's just very, like, true to life. Like, the freeway scene, everyone who drives on the freeway for the first time, that is your level of anxiety. Even if there's not a truck, you know, tailgating you. And
it happens in subtler ways, too. Like, just in terms of architecture, you can tell where you are by, like, what people's houses look like. Like, you see Cher's house, and, like, that's very clearly that Beverly Hill. She even has the line of, aren't the columns great? They're from, like, 1972.
Yeah, the columns, the white columns.
The white columns on her very, like, McDonald's.
Classic.
But then, the house in the valley is very much of that, like, ranch style.
It's the ranch house. Yeah.
That exists in the valley everywhere.
Has. Yeah.
So it even nails it in terms of that kind of specificity, the kind of things that you don't really pay attention to until you start living here and, like, observing that LA looks so different in different locations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway.
I like when she doesn't want to learn to parallel park because everywhere has everywhere valet. Has and everywhere. I was like, I wish.
That's a really good line. Well, it's everywhere she's very, going. Yeah. Yeah. LA. Yeah.
Everywhere I'm going has valet, but I can't afford it.
Yeah.
And in her defense, the Starbucks in Beverly Hills does have valet.
Yeah. I think we're getting into, like, just quoting territory, which is so easy to do when talking about this movie. We could just, like, quote it ad nauseum.
Yeah.
But I think one of the real strengths of this movie is the script.
Mm-hmm.
And
the language.
Yeah. It really did create a whole, like, it's a high school milieu, but it's really the Clueless milieu. It's like, this is very, very Amy Heckerling. This is her universe. And it's developed in every part of this movie.
As If is quoted in Fish Tank.
Yeah.
That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, I saw you post about that.
But I think I asked this when we talked about Little Women. We are all roughly the same age, and this came out during our formative years.
Yeah.
Do you think that future generations will watch this and get the same pleasure that we do? Is this a nostalgia trip for us? Like, when was the last time you watched it? were you an adult? And did you, what, how did your reaction change?
I mean, no, they're not going to have the same reaction because they weren't like around in that very specific moment. That's like asking, you know, somebody who's not a baby boomer what they think of The Graduate. Like, mm-hmm. it captured a specific moment. But I do think they'll still like watching it.
Okay.
It's still a fun movie.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I think there's one joke actually in Mean Girls, which owes a lot to Clueless, which is when Regina George is complimenting that girl's skirt, that girl's plaid short skirt, which is a Clueless skirt. And she says, oh, yeah, it was my mom's in the 80s or whatever. And I feel like that is a cultural touchstone point that, you know, people watching Mean Girls didn't understand. But it's like a throwback to that. I think there's plenty of things for, like, Generation Z or whatever to enjoy.
What do we do when we get past it?
No, G. No, it's Z. Yeah, the post-millennial, whatever they're called. The so, children, the kids these days. I think it's, like, but it's cool because it's like vintage. To them.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because it was like made the year they were born.
Yeah.
So it's that there are those levels of pleasure. And it's not like a lot of those cultural references are not around anymore. Mm-hmm. I feel like, and I also really sort of buck against his argument all the time as if people cannot enjoy media that was created before they were aware of it.
Right.
And that's just such ridiculous.
Right. They're just going to enjoy it in a different way.
Right.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And it's like they're going to bring new perspectives to it, which is how movies stay relevant.
Right. Mm-hmm. But I will say I don't enjoy the John Hughes movies. They feel very of their time and inessential. Like, they just, I mean, yeah.
Well, I think it's important to have, like, younger voices come in and bring other perspectives to the movies and challenge them, as I think people our age or a little bit younger do to John Hughes movies, because I think there are a lot of things, like, I don't enjoy them either, but part of it is
part of it is
aesthetic and part of it is political or social. But it's like I think there are things that you could criticize in Clueless that maybe younger people would, and I would welcome that. It's like, let's have a discussion about this movie and then let's bring it in context and in conversation with the teen films that it's influenced.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because I've talked about 16 Candles on the show. We did a teen series.
I don't like 16 Candles either.
For the record, in case, you know, listeners are just tuning into the show, we've talked about 16 Candles, Heathers, and Dazed and Confused. And Heathers is in the FlixWise favorites list, and Dazed and Confused is in the FlixWise favorites list. 16 Candles is not. So I just want to make sure that this is in the... that this is a story that will endure. I don't put things in the FlixWise favorites list lightly, okay? This is a big responsibility. But I can acknowledge, like, I cannot be objective about this movie. I love it. This is, I watched this as a kid.
Okay.
I adore it.
Well, my relationship is not like that.
Okay.
I don't remember the first time I saw this movie, but I was not a child.
Okay.
I was probably in college.
Okay. All right.
Because I didn't grow up watching movies.
Okay.
In theaters.
Okay.
I just had, like, Disney VHSs.
Yeah.
So I feel like, yeah, you can definitely come to this as an older person and still find plenty of pleasures, even if it doesn't, like, you know, hit that sweet spot of, like, your childhood memories.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And I was delighted when I rewatched it to find, like, I was legitimately laughing at so much about this movie.
It's a fun script.
Yeah. One more thought. Mariah, you recently compiled a list of the 103 most essential films by female filmmakers. This was the number one.
It was.
Pick.
500 people put in their votes, and up until the last four votes, Clueless and Lost in Translation were tied.
Okay.
It was going to be a tie. And then I had four people put in. I was like, last call, put in your votes. And these four people put in their votes. And two of them both had both. And so they were still tied. And then the last two came in and they both had Clueless and not Lost in Translation. So one over two with two votes.
All right.
Yeah. It was neck and neck.
Yeah. But I've sort of gathered that it was a controversial pick.
It was.
Why is that? What is people's problem?
The one person who picked up the big story, instead of, like, burying the lead and letting people discover the list and the, you know, like, I promoted it without purposefully not saying what the number one was because I wanted people to be surprised. And she essentially said that it wasn't a worthy film.
Okay.
because it's a teen film.
Okay.
And for all of the reasons that we just lauded it, she looks at that as not good things.
Okay.
Not a praiseworthy film. It's okay. Not an important film. It's not an Oscar film.
I think specifically it's not important because it's... It would not be the exemplary film that you would show to a person, a film person, who is trying to legitimize female filmmakers. Mm-hmm. I think the argument was basically that Clueless is not exemplary enough. It's not something that you would point to and say, this is why we should have more women making movies.
Okay. Can we debunk that right now?
Yes.
Can we just...
I'd like to state for the record that that's bullshit.
Okay.
This is respectability politics at its worst, and it's really damaging when you say that women should only make a certain type of film because that's the kind of film that is will win Oscars, for example, because winning Oscars is the ultimate sign of respectability.
It's the double standard of if men make films, they can make any film, it's fine. But if women make films... they have to be great films because otherwise, why are we giving our space up to them? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but Clueless is a great film.
It is a great film. So even with that argument, yeah. It's like moot, but it's like, yeah. That's where it comes from.
Yeah. But, well, is it, as you said, it's a teen movie. Maybe what we need to do is talk about the legitimacy of the teen movie as a genre. Like, why are we dismissing that?
There's a class now being taught at USC exactly on the teen film as a genre, as an important genre.
Yeah.
There was a teen film class when I was an undergrad at UC Irvine as well, and it was one of the best classes that they had there because in the history of the teen film, you have the history of the second half of the 20th century, and it's... one of the most important things in understanding, like, American culture as represented in American cinema. And the teen film is always contemporary.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Unlike several other genres, the Western, the gangster film, sometimes even the musical. These are often set in the past. Mm-hmm. The teen film is almost invariably a contemporary film and a reflection of the times.
Mm-hmm. I think it also has to do with, like, who they're made for. Like, if it's a movie made... I mean, it says in the name, teen film. But if it's a movie made for teenage girls, it's not supposed to be, like, good enough. Like, mm-hmm. No, that's complete BS.
Because teenage girls are, like, the most disrespected demographic in American culture.
And they're also the most... marketed to and the biggest cash cow,
mm-hmm.
and yet they are treated as if they're subhuman,
mm-hmm.
yeah. constantly.
Is that still right?
It's
just, true?
It's as if that they are too, like, the reason that they're giving people money is because they're stupid.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you know, it's unbelievable to me that that is. I mean, it's not unbelievable, but it's incredibly frustrating that that's still the case. It's like teenage girls are drivers of the economy. They're drivers of. Fashion and popularity and what is, you know, next
on fleek, if you will.
What is next and upcoming? And it's like, and also they're, for better or for worse, cultural appropriators of other elements mm-hmm. of culture that they sort of adopt and say, like, this is cool and this is what we want to do. And because they're the most marketed to, that's what gets picked up into the mainstream. So they're really drivers of culture, and yet... you know, an exemplary teen film like Clueless is still talked down to, mm-hmm. even though it's literally the best example of this genre, which is not an inconsequential American genre.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, absolutely. It's like, well, I'm getting upset, but yes, it's like, you know, I don't think it's like, in the 70s or whatever, in the 60s, B genres that were talked about in terms of being, you know, for children, for teenagers, for young boys, these were taken up by cultural critics and by people, and they were made respectable.
Mm-hmm.
Because, well, okay, here's my feminist critique. But because they were marketed to men, and they were about men's issues, and they were taken to be important.
Mm-hmm.
We wouldn't have the French New Wave without gangster B-movies. And those things are now lauded as some of the most important cultural documents.
Right.
And yet, the teen film, and specifically the teen film that focuses on women, is still viewed as less than. For example, in American cinema currently, the most well-respected female director is Kathryn Bigelow, because she makes movies that are about men and masculinity, and these are, in the sort of beginning of her career, it was fun and sort of novel that a woman was making these hyper-masculine movies, and then, you know, she made some movies and they got nominated for Oscars, they won some Oscars. She's very well regarded because she makes the kind of serious-minded cinema that is privileged in the society for a certain type of film critic.
Mm-hmm.
Amy Heckerling makes movies for teenage girls, not privileged in society.
Right.
So her films are not important.
She was the choice for September for Women's Pictures, and every time I wrote about it, I felt like I was fighting this uphill battle of, like, these are really well-made, really enjoyable movies that did really well in their time, and I still feel like I have to justify every single week.
Yeah.
Wow. Right. People want you to talk about Catherine Bigelow. They want you to talk about Claire Denis. They want you to talk about, you know, these types of movies, mm-hmm. and it's like, let's diversify a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I think I like this Righteous Anger. This is awesome.
I'm still angry. I'm, like, still mad.
I can see that.
I'm, like, kind of a little bit like this.
But let's bring it all back around to Clueless. Exceptional movie. The cast, we haven't really talked about the cast, but they're all extraordinary. And that also, yet another thing that really sets this film apart.
And another thing that Heckerling kept doing, which is that it launched a bunch of careers all over again. It's what Fast Times at Ridgemont High did.
Yeah.
It's what Clueless did. It's actually, even to a certain degree, what Look Who's Talking did.
All right. Well, then let's put it to a vote. We have an even number here, so this is a problem.
I don't think it's going to be a problem.
Yeah.
All right. Who thinks Clueless is worthy of the FlixWise favorites list? Let's go around the dial. Mariah.
Totally.
Totes. All right.
Not totes.
Not totes. Not yet.
That's millennial. True. That's,
I know. Totally. I know. Totally. All right. I'm bugging. Sorry.
nice.
Kristen, how about you?
Absolutely. It does.
All right. Emery, I know.
I pitched it.
Yeah. And surprise, surprise. I think so, too. And that's the way we frame it, FlixWise, that is. Listeners, do you think we are totally bugging? Well, then you can haul ass to our website, FlixWise.com, and you can tell us what you think of Clueless. Or you can go to our Facebook page, or you can hang with me on Twitter. The handle is @FlixWise. But before you do all of that, please rate us and leave us a comment on iTunes. Really helps us stand out in the iTunes database, and all the cool kids are doing it. On our next show, we're switching gears, sorta. We do have another installment in our female filmmaker series, but I feel pretty confident in saying it's the total opposite of Clueless in every way. Martin Kessler is going to tell us why he thinks Liu Xiaoyan's Oxhide 2 is one of the greatest movies of all time. Going from a movie that everybody has seen to a movie that, like, five people have seen. So, but we'll see what the download numbers
That's
are.
That's right.
On that
see,
one.
women making a variety of different
How
kind
about
of movies
that?
Since the
you
beginning
don't
of women.
Say.
That's right.
All right, so we're looking forward to that. But for now, Anne-Marie, thank you so much for pitching Clueless. Thank you for giving us an excuse to talk about Clueless.
Absolutely, my pleasure.
Mariah, thank you for coming back on the show.
Ah, yeah.
All right, Kristen, if you calm down, we're good. Not yet. We're still.
No.
Still.
I'm always angry.
She's characterized by her complete lack of chill.
Yeah, that's right. I'm staying on brand. I'm angry all the time.
So we'll see you all later, and we hope not sporadically. Until next time, we're outie.